Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to dig into something pretty fascinating where material science meets medicine. We're looking at how to improve a common plastic, PMMA. You find it in bone cement, dental stuff, all sorts, to make it work even better inside the human body.
Exactly. We've got a research paper here looking at exactly that. It's called Predictive Modeling of PMMA-Based Polymer Composites Reinforced with Hydroxyapatite, a Machine Learning and FEM Approach.
Quite a mouthful.
It is, but the core idea is using, well, some advanced computer techniques to figure out the best way to mix PMMA with tiny particles of something called hydroxyapatite, or HAP.
HAP. That sounds familiar.
It should. It's remarkably similar to the mineral part of our own bones and teeth. So the goal is finding that sweet spot, how much HAP gives the best strength and helps it bond with tissues without causing, you know, any problems.
Okay, so PMMA is useful, clearly, but you mentioned problems.
Yeah.
What are the main limitations when we're talking about using it inside us?
Well, the paper lays out a few key things. First, it doesn't naturally bond that well with bone. That's called osseointegration.
Right, like it doesn't fully integrate.
Precisely, and that can lead to implants loosening over time. Second, it doesn't break down in the body. It's non-degradable.
Which sounds good, but isn't always?
Not always, no. Sometimes you want the material to slowly dissolve as new bone grows in. PMMA can actually block that natural regeneration process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else?
There's also the heat. When it's prepared, like for bone cement, the chemical reaction can generate quite a bit of heat, potentially damaging nearby tissues.
Ouch.
And finally, there's a small but lingering concern about it possibly releasing tiny amounts of potentially toxic stuff over the long term.
Got it. So a few hurdles to clear. And the proposed solution in this study is adding
hydroxyapatite.
Yeah.
HAP. That's the focus here.
Right. The bone-like stuff. So why is HAP the magic ingredient here? What makes it such a good fit with PMMA?
Well, its biggest plus is that similarity to our own tissues. The body is much less likely to see it as foreign.
Makes sense. Lower rejection risk.
Exactly. And crucially, HAP can actually encourage bone cells to grow onto the implant. It's like putting out a welcome mat for bone growth.
That's pretty cool. And where do scientists get this HAP? Do they, like, mine it?
Sometimes it comes from natural sources like animal bones, which are then heavily purified, but they can also make it synthetically in the lab, which is great because it lets them control things like particle size very precisely.
Ah, so they can tailor it for the best results.
Right. Fine-tuning it to really mesh well with the PMMA and give the best reinforcement.
Okay, so it's biocompatible, encourages bone growth.
Yep.
What else does HAP bring to the table? Any other benefits?
Oh, yeah. Mechanically, it's a big boost. It significantly increases the PMMA's elastic modulus. That's basically its stiffness.
How rigid it is.
Right. And also its compressive strength, how much squeezing it can take before it fails.
Yeah.
Both are really vital for implants that need to last.
So stronger and more body friendly.
That's the idea. The paper mentions a few examples, too, like these special nanofiber scaffolds made with PMMA and HAP that help tissue regeneration, or even composites with added antimicrobial bits.
Wow. Okay, now, the paper's title mentioned predictive modeling. Why is simulating this stuff so important? Why not just mix and test?
Well, you can just mix and test, but that's the old way. It's slow, it's expensive, you end up doing tons of lab experiments.
Trial and error, basically.
Exactly. Predictive modeling lets us be much smarter about it. This study uses a really neat combination, some real lab experiments, something called representative volume elements, or RVEs.
RVEs. Sounds technical.
It is a bit. And machine learning. This mix is powerful because it can capture the really complex stuff happening at the micro level inside the material, things traditional models often just gloss over.
Okay, tell me more about these RVEs. What are they actually simulating?
Think of taking a tiny, tiny cube of the composite material, one that's statistically representative of the whole thing. The RVE modeling creates a digital version of that cube. It simulates how the HAP particles are actually distributed in the PMMA. Are they spread out evenly? Or are they clumping?
Like badly mixed cake batter.
Kind of, yeah. And it also simulates the interface, the actual boundary where the particle meets the plastic, and how that boundary behaves under stress. It's about understanding the internal architecture.
So what was wrong with the older ways of modeling this? Why did we need this RVE approach?
Older models often had to make big assumptions, like they'd assume the particles were perfectly spread out or that the bond between the particle and the plastic was perfect.
Which isn't realistic.
Rarely. In reality, you get clumps. The bond isn't always flawless. Models like Voigt and Rias gave you theoretical upper and lower limits, but they couldn't capture those details. Even early computer models often struggled with things like particle clumping.
So this study, by using RVEs and machine learning together is a step up from just using machine learning on its own.
Definitely. The key is integrating the detailed microstructural picture from the RVEs into the machine learning. Some previous work might have used machine learning just based on the recipe, you know, put in 10% HAP, get out the strength. But this study feeds the ML models data that reflects that internal structure predicted by the RVEs. So the ML learns not just what's in it, but how it's arranged and how that affects performance. It's a much deeper understanding.
Okay, machine learning to the rescue. So how are they using it here? Are the computers basically running virtual stress tests?
You could sort of think of it that way, yeah. The machine learning models are trained to predict those key mechanical properties we talked about, the stiffness or elastic modulus and the compressive strength.
Based on what inputs?
Based on various factors that describe the composite.
And what specific ML tools did they use? Any familiar names?
They tried out three well-known ones. A feed-forward neural network, FFNN, a radial basis neural network, RBNN, and maybe the most familiar, a support vector machine, SVM. Each works a bit differently to find patterns.
Okay, and what data did they feed these algorithms? What did the models learn from?
This is where it gets clever. They used a mix. Some data came from actual physical experiments they did in the lab, but they also generated a lot of synthetic data using those detailed RVE simulations we discussed.
Synthetic data? So computer-generated results. Why do that?
Yeah, exactly. Doing enough physical experiments to cover every possible HAP concentration and particle arrangement would take forever and cost a fortune.
Right.
So the RVE simulations let them generate lots of high-quality data points across a wide range from 1% HAP all the way up to 30% much faster. This augmented data set gives the ML models much more to learn from.
Ah, it fills in the gaps and makes the models more robust.
Precisely. And it helps them generalize better to make predictions for scenarios they haven't explicitly seen in a real lab test.
Makes total sense. So what specific things, what features were the models looking at to make these predictions?
They considered the key factors you'd expect. The actual percentage of HAP, the average size of those HAP particles, properties related to that interface between the HAP and PMMA, and also the basic properties of the PMMA and HAP materials themselves, like their individual stiffness and strength values.
Okay, the models have been trained, the simulations run. What did they find? How did adding more HAP actually affect the stiffness and strength in practice and in the models?
Well, the trend was pretty clear and consistent. As they added more HAP, both the stiffness, the elastic modulus, and another property called shear modulus, which is resistance to twisting, went up.
Noticeably.
Oh, yeah. For elastic modulus, just going from 5% HAP to 15%, HAP saw stiffness jump by about 40%, from roughly 2,500 megapascals up to 3,500.
Wow, that's a big increase.
It is. And going up to 30%, HAP pushed it close to 5,000 megapascals. Shear modulus showed a similar strong upward trend.
Okay. And what about the compressive strength, its ability to resist crushing?
Same story. It consistently increased with more HAP, both in the simulations and the real experiments.
And how well did the simulations match the real-world tests for strength?
Actually, remarkably well. The paper shows the simulation results for compressive strength were really close to the experimental values at the different HAP levels, often only off by a few percent. Pretty impressive alignment.
That is good. So of the three machine learning models, they tested FFNN, RBNN, SVM did one come out on top, which was the star predictor.
The support vector machine, the SVM, was definitely the winner overall. It showed the best accuracy and the lowest error for predicting both elastic modulus and compressive strength.
How good are we talking?
For elastic modulus, it hit an R-squared value of 0.94. R-squared close to 1 basically means the model's predictions are matching the actual results extremely well.
Okay.
And its prediction error was typically below 5%. That kind of accuracy is really useful. It means you can have more confidence using the model to guide material design.
Right. And the other two? How did the RBNN and FFNN stack up?
The RBNN, the radial basis function one, it did pretty well, especially in the middle range of HAP content, say 20-30%. But it was apparently a bit less stable or reliable at very low or very high HAP amounts. Its R squared was okay for elastic modulus around 0.59, but actually really high for compressive strength, like 0.988 on the test data. So a bit mixed.
Interesting. And the feed-forward neural network?
The FFNN showed, let's say, moderate accuracy. It was decent, but apparently more sensitive to variations in the data and sometimes tended to underestimate the actual strength or stiffness. Its R-squared values were around 0.82 for elastic modulus and 0.975 for compressive strength. Still good, but not quite as consistent as the SVM.
Got it. And how did the original RVE model predictions, just the simulation without the ML layer, compare to reality in the ML models?
The RVE model on its own was pretty reliable at the lower HAP concentrations, say 5 or 15%, but it started to overestimate the properties, especially stiffness, when they got up to higher amounts, like 30% HAP.
Why would that happen?
Likely because of those ideal assumptions built into it. It assumes perfect particle distribution and bonding, which might hold up okay when there's less HAP, but becomes less realistic when you pack more particles in. You get more clumping, more complex interactions that the basic RVE might miss.
So the idealized simulation drifts from reality at higher concentrations.
Exactly. And that's where the SVM, having learned from both the simulation and the real experimental data, often gave more accurate prediction in those tricky high concentration cases. It learned to account for some of that real-world messiness.
This is all incredibly insightful. But like any study, it probably has its limits, right? What did the researchers acknowledge as the boundaries here?
Oh, absolutely. They were upfront about several things. First, the amount of actual experimental data was limited primarily just those three HAP concentration points.
Okay.
Second, the synthetic data from the RVEs, while super useful, is still based on assumptions about particle shapes, distribution, the interface, which might not capture every nuance of reality.
Right. It's still a model.
Exactly. They also pointed out they hadn't done tons of experimental validation across a really wide range of conditions yet, and their focus was mainly on elastic modulus and compressive strength.
Not other properties.
Right. Things like fracture toughness, how resistant it is to cracking, weren't the focus here. Also, the models were developed specifically for PMMA with HAP. How well they'd work for, say, PEEK with HAP or some other polymer is an open question.
And probably computationally intensive.
That too. Running detailed RVE simulations and training complex ML models takes significant computing power.
Makes sense. So given those limitations, what's next? What future research directions did they suggest?
They proposed a few interesting paths. One is developing hybrid approaches that blend the strengths of these detailed micromechanical models, like RVEs, even more tightly with machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
Also feeding the ML models even more specific domain knowledge, like better data about how that interface between PMMA and HAP really behaves.
Making the input smarter.
Essentially, yes. And exploring different types of machine learning, maybe hybrid clustering methods, to see if they can get even more robust and accurate predictions.
Okay, so pulling this all together, what's the big takeaway from this deep dive into predicting how strong this enhanced PMMA can be?
I think the key message is that this combination of detailed simulation and smart machine learning is a really potent tool. It gives us a much more powerful way to predict and ultimately optimize how these composite materials will behave before we spend ages making them in the lab.
Which speeds things up.
Massively. And for things like bone cements or dental implants, that means getting stronger, more reliable, more biocompatible materials potentially developed faster. It's about engineering better integration with the body, which could lead to implants that last longer and work better.
It really does make you think, doesn't it? About how these advanced modeling tools could just accelerate material discovery in so many areas beyond medicine.
Absolutely.
And how understanding these tiny microscopic interactions is the key to unlocking, well, maybe materials and properties we haven't even imagined yet. What other kinds of materials do you think are just crying out for this kind of deep predictive analysis?